Okay. This is Ken Freeland facilitating the 9/11 Truth Teleconference for May 27th, 2015. Kurt, you want to call the roll?
Yeah, sure. I've got six people that I've written down, so I've probably got about half of the people we've got so far. So I'll read the names I know, and then I'll see who I didn't get. Myself, Craig McKee, Ken Freeland, Jim Fetzer, Dwayne Deep, Ned Delaney, and James Hufford. So who else do we have?
Marty McGee, Architects and Engineers.
Marty McGee, okay.
MCGEE.
Got it, great.
Cheryl Curtis.
Okay.
Kat McGuire.
Kat McGuire, got it.
Wayne Costi.
Okay.
Les Jameson.
Les Jameson, okay, hi.
How many folks you got, though?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I have 11.
And Don okay. Fox, I'm on the call as well.
Don Fox, okay.
Yep.
So that makes an even double, huh?
Yeah. So do you want me to read the 12 over again, Ken? Or
no, that's fine. As long as you got 12 names, we got 12 people on the call, so we're okay. We're ready to roll. Any amendments to the minutes as posted by Craig the other day? Hearing none, we'll take the minutes to approve. And any amendments to tonight's drafted run by? Hearing none, then we'll proceed. Okay. Our featured guest tonight is Jim Fetzer, and Ned will give us a short introduction, and Jim will comment on both the part one and part two of tonight's agenda. He wants to combine them both and address them both at the same time, and then we'll move on to questions and answers. Who just joined the call, please?
Barry Zwicker in Toronto.
Hi, Barry.
Hi.
Hey, Barry.
Hi.
Okay. So, Ned, go ahead.
Okay, just a brief introduction. Most of us, everyone probably knows Jim, but I pulled this off the web just as a brief introduction. According to Wikipedia, James Fetzer is a philosopher, science, and a conspiracy theorist, which immediately serves to discredit remaining credits and accomplishments. Fire beware. But James Fetzer has obviously been with us before, hence the following is intended simply as a quick review of those accomplishments. He received his PhD from Indiana University in 1970 in the history and philosophy of science. He has taught at a number of higher learning institutions, and he retired from the University of Minnesota, Duluth, in 2006. James Fetzer has published over 100 articles and 20 books on the philosophy of science and cognitive science, including artificial intelligence, though I note that Wikipedia has not updated recent accomplishments. He has written for Veterans Today and Press TV. Investigations range from the Kennedy assassination, the death of Senator Paul Wellstone, various aspects of 9/11, Sandy Hook, and the Boston bombing. He's a co-founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth and is host of his radio show entitled The Real Deal. I ask that Jim clarify any points stated or omitted he feels pertinent to the lead-up to our discussion this evening. And he has also co-authored a book with Mike Palachuk, recently released, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. Please welcome James Fetzer.
Hey, it's a real pleasure to be here. Just in relation to Wikipedia, it's in case anyone doesn't realize, it's a political op, and when I participated in a conference at the University of Illinois on its campus on academic freedom, are there limits to inquiry, JFK 9/11, and the Holocaust, they gutted my entry. They took out all my work on conspiracy. They put in stuff to try to smear me as much as possible. Coincidentally, I had a copy of the rather extensive entry before they butchered it. So I published an article, which you can now find on Veterans Truth Network, entitled James H. Fetzer, Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia, Busted, because I go through and show you what they have now and what they took out, and it's really massive and very instructive. I had an encounter with Wikipedia before when I tried to correct their entry on Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and I repeatedly tried, was repeatedly wiped out. I eventually had a contact with the editor, and I said, "You're not going to let me correct it, are you?" And he said, "No." Now, all of that was on my, you know, among my 150 articles on Veterans Today, where I've been publishing since 6 July 2011, 150 articles. And through this exchange I had with Gordon Duff, which was over Jade Helm, which is why I'm combining them, so you'll understand how they're intertwined, he wound up deleting all 150 of my articles, all 150. Unbelievable. It was a kind of an intellectual massacre. Now, how did this happen? Well, you go back about 6 weeks ago, and I and Preston James were on the Veterans Today radio with Stu Webb. Stu Webb's a famous federal whistleblower. He's initiated 4 or 5 congressional hearings because of scandals he's uncovered. Stu and Chip Tatum, who's a former CIA spook who actually has been revealing, you know, what's been going on behind the scenes, had been investing their own money to develop the radio show. I was on with Stu and Preston James, and when Stu got an email from Gordon telling him he was fired. This was rather ludicrous because none of us are paid anything, not a nickel for doing any of this. But I told Gordon I thought this was a huge mistake. Stu had a big following. The radio shows he'd been doing for Veterans Today when it was on Revolution Radio had been garnering as many as 500,000 to 1 million listeners. I told Gordon I thought this would have unexpected repercussions and none of them would be good. About a week later, another writer for Veterans Today by the name of Robert O'Dowd, like myself, a former Marine, published an article about Jade Helm, raising very general questions about it. In retrospect, it was quite an innocuous article. Gordon intervened and put in a big editor's note saying he and the managing editor, Jim Duff, regarded this article as unsourced, ignorant, basically, you know, just plain wrong, and that they consulted their sources. And Jade Helm was a perfectly routine training op, and there's nothing to be concerned about. I pondered this. I thought it was very offensive. I have massive editorial experience as an abuse of his position as editor, and authored my own article entitled Jade Helm is Not an Ordinary Training Drill. Gordon added an editor's note twice as long and more venomous than what he put on O'Dowd's. But nevertheless, it got 600 reads in the first hour, and I told my wife it was going to go to number one. Well, Gordon saw that too, so he took it down. That evening, I went on with Stu Webb, who was now with the Veterans Truth Radio. It's now been expanded to Veterans Truth Network because we now have articles as well as simply a radio show, and talked about this, what had happened with Duff and O'Dowd and all that, and why I thought Jade Helm was looking very ominous. And the next morning I discovered, kind of casually, that I'd been taken off of Veterans Today, where I was both an editor and a journalist. That evening I was scheduled to go on with Jeff Rentz to talk about Jade Helm. While I was waiting, the producer was explaining he was having trouble getting a hold of Jeff, which was highly unusual. I hung for 40 minutes there playing a rebroadcast from the day before, which was a conversation Jeff was having with a woman from Texas about Jade Helm. So I thought, well, this will work out effortlessly when Jeff showed up. But after 40 minutes, he hadn't shown. I sent him a note. I hoped he was okay. The next morning, I got a response from his girlfriend saying he'd been in a serious accident. He was hospitalized, giving me the number. 2 hours later, I called the hospital. He was in ICU. Monday, he called me and told me what had happened. And it appeared that he was hit with some psychotronic. He was rendered unconscious. He had a very sturdy vehicle, a Toyota Land Rover, went into a 5-foot deep ditch. The police described it as an unsurvivable accident. Well, he survived. We both think maybe it was because he was unconscious. His body wasn't resisting. In any case, he broke his left wrist and did damage to his shoulder, but he survived. He had me on that night about Jade Helm. And I think it was only at the end of that program when I told him that Stu Webb had been run off the road on Saturday. And Stu recognized the person who did it was a black woman, worked for the FBI. This is like the fifth time people have tried to take Stu out. So this was all, to me, rather disturbing because I was right in the middle of all of it. I mean, the very people I'm dealing with. And Gordon had told me at a point in the past that he could have somebody taken out by making 2 phone calls. Therefore, it seemed to me, given who the people he was upset with, that this didn't look very good. It looked very suspicious to me. Now, I went to join with these veterans at Truth Network. I mean, it would then change its name. Altogether, there'd be about five or six of us who would go from Veterans Today there, including a Dean Henderson. Meanwhile, Preston James actually was publishing the last of a series of articles, and he was retiring from Veterans Today. So that it's that Stu and Chip and Dean Henderson and myself and a couple others who have been the core now of this Veterans Truth Network. I noticed after 3 weeks after Gordon had taken me off of ET, my name was still on the list of contributors, of authors. I'd also noticed, by the way, immediately that my four most recent articles about Boston bombing had disappeared. They had just plain old disappeared. So in the meanwhile, I was asking, what had happened to these articles about the Boston bombing? I never got a response. I now believe that Gordon immediately took down as many as 40 because I had a 15 pages of about 10 articles a page in all the time I'd been there. But when they eventually sent me a packet of my article, it was only 11 pages and was missing, you know, a whole lot of crucial. In fact, I haven't even to this day been able to figure out all of what has gone there. But when I said to Gordon that I thought 3 weeks was long enough, you ought to take my name down, that's when he deleted all the rest of my articles. Just boom, boom. They were gone. Now you see them, now you don't. I have to tell you that Gordon has published several absolutely ridiculous articles lampooning anyone who's suspicious or cares about Jade Helm. I'm therefore strongly disposed to infer that he was out there to suppress reporting about Jade Helm. He wants to trivialize it. And just to give you two background observations that'll play significantly when you hear the rest of what I'm going to say. Gordon had maybe 6 months ago said something about, I'm a rich Jew with a handler. My belief is that he had a new handler, and the new handler, to put it mildly, shit bricks when he discovered I had all these articles about JFK. It was the best repository of recent research on JFK in the world. All this work on 9/11, you know, with all kinds of intricate arguments about different hypotheses and theories. I had, of course, a couple of classics on Wellstone, but I had over 30 articles on Boston, on Sandy Hook, and several that were absolutely devastating about the Boston bombing. So he got rid of all of that in one fell swoop, virtually by the push of a button. Now, he has in the meanwhile published several really trifling articles trying to maintain Jade Helm as nothing. Well, let me tell you what I've learned about Jade Helm in the meanwhile, because I've done like 6 different shows on The Real Deal, which went video this year. So I now have about 60 shows that are video shows, and I can present the evidence, so it's much more powerful. And there are several links there, so I'm not going to belabor this, but I'll tell you. Gordon had told me this was a National Guard and 1,200 troops, and it was routine training drill. None of that is true. We go back all the way to headquarters of the Army and released a manual in December of 2008 talking about dominating the human domain and talks about conducting operations in areas heretofore off-limits, homeland of the United States. That's clearly taking place here. It was in the midst of 9/11 when Bush slipped in something about the U.S. being a battlefield. They created North American Command. Never before did in the history of the country do we have a North American Command. Department of Homeland Security has acquired over 2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is not even permissible in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899, because this is ammunition that blows bodies apart and kills people. Standard military ammunition is typically pointed and copper jacketed, designed to pass through bodies, take soldiers out of combat without rendering them asunder. It involves representatives of all four branches, especially special ops, green beret types. These people are very, very brutal and, you know, notorious for killing women and children in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is all a very bad sign. They have at least 1,200 military vehicles alone involved in this. The idea 1,200 was just simply ridiculous. Over 1,200 vehicles, and if you have any military experience, you understand you can't assemble a huge array of vehicles if you don't intend to deploy them promptly, because otherwise you have insuperable problems of maintenance. They require lubrication, they require oil changes, but where they got them all assembled, there aren't any garages with racks and no opportunity to maintain, you know, even routine maintenance. So they got all this stuff out there to deploy. Now, the most ominous, and this comes to the other remark that Gordon made in passing that stuck in my mind because I had never heard a remark like that before, and I did, frankly, did not understand at the time. He said in a conversation about the martial law, we have nothing to worry about until they close the Walmarts. Well, they've closed five Walmarts. They've not only closed the Walmarts, they're remodeling the Walmarts. They're putting up 8 and 9 foot fences around the Walmarts. They're putting up plastic sheeting on the windows so you can't see what's going on. They're tearing up the floors inside. I have an expert more knowledgeable than I about this who has explained to me they're laying down patterns of electrodes. So when they have detainees in an area, and it's all going to be, you know, they have these huge shipping crates, the kind you see on freighters at sea, that are loaded with iron bars and the like so they can create temporary detention facilities inside these Walmarts, that they can, you know, extend electricity through your feet into your body. They could render you unconscious. They could even kill you. They have taken a Walmart in Florida, and they have given it blast-resistant doors. The estimate on the cost of blast-resistant doors is from $100,000 to $200,000. They're bringing all kinds of equipment, helicopters, ammunition, and so forth into these Walmarts. It's very clear the Walmarts are going to play a crucial function. They're going to be command and control centers. They're going to be logistic bases. If you need more ammunition, if you need a tank, an armored personnel carrier, just contact your Walmart, you get it. Turns out there were longstanding agreements between FEMA and Walmart. Anytime FEMA needed the Walmart, they would turn it over immediately, regardless of the rationale that was present. We have over 300 FEMA camps distributed all over this country. We have an abundance of FEMA camps, but we have a dearth of domestic terrorists. The Senate Committee on Homeland Security released a study on 3 October 2012 based upon its review of 680 Fusion Center reports, where fusion centers merge federal, state, and local anti-terrorist activity, gathered between 2009 and 2010. In those 680 reports, they found not a single instance of domestic terrorist activity, nor any case in which a fusion center had thwarted some planned domestic terrorist act. That largest sample, that varied, is a perfectly appropriate basis for inferring that domestic terrorism in the United States is either non-existent or virtually non-existent, which is no doubt why my studies about Sandy Hook, we even have the FEMA manual for Sandy Hook. I mean, it was rehearsed the day before. That's when they brought in the porta potties and had the sign, everyone must check in, and a host of other issues. And the Boston bombing, nobody died at Boston bombing. The police were on the bullhorn saying this is a drill. The Boston Globe was tweeting about it. You can look through the smoke, and it was a puff bomb. I was an artillery officer in the Marine Corps. That wasn't powerful enough to kill anyone. In fact, Nathan Foulkes, a Hollywood producer-director, who identified one of the key players in Boston with the cowboy hat, Carlos Arredondo, as an actor he cast in one of his own films, we have the form they use to hire amputee actors. People have observed that people were there with missing limbs, but there weren't any missing limbs found on the scene. Well, there wasn't even any blood at the scene. The blood showed up later, which, of course, is physiologically impossible, as Lorraine Day, who served as the chief of trauma surgery for San Francisco Hospital for 25 years, has observed. Now, the states that are involved, and the surveillance is being done by the government because, you know, they've only now been declared by the Second Court of Appeals to be illegal to be conducting the surveillance. But there are various elements in the government trying to push ahead. Rand Paul is doing a very good job of defeating them, I must say. He has impressed me tremendously. He's a brilliant politician. He understands the rules of the Senate backwards and forwards. I personally regard him as the most astute politician we have seen since JFK. And I was a huge fan of JFK. Now, what's happening is this surveillance is targeted not at domestic terrorists because they're non-existent, but at groups and individuals who might have the wherewithal, the background training ability to stand up and resist the imposition of a military police state by force. And that includes especially veterans. In the eyes of the Department of Homeland Security, this is absurd. Veterans are terrorists. They're also out for constitutionalists, Ron Paul supporters, 9/11 truthers, NRA members. I mean, for all the obvious reasons, that's what's going on here. Now, they tried to pacify public concern, which has become immense. If you go online, you will find hundreds upon hundreds of YouTubes where ordinary citizens have used their cell phone cameras to take photographs or little videos about trains with 100 cars and every one has two military vehicles. They have the biggest military convoy they've ever seen in the state of Colorado. even though Colorado officially opted out. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on here. And this lieutenant colonel they sent to this obscure little town in Texas actually even admitted that they were going to be conducting some limited extractions. Let me fill you in on that. The meaning of JADE is it's a software program developed by DARPA for the rapid distribution of logistics. So the JADE part of JADE Helm is using those Walmarts to distribute logistics support for these operations. The Helm part has to do with homeland extraction of local dissidents, militants, local militants. They're defining dissident so broadly. If you're remotely critical of the government, you're a dissident. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, you don't have to have organized a gang or conduct any opposite country to get on their list. They have three major lists. They have a red list of people who they think are in the position to inform others of what's going on. They want to decapitate them. Then there's a blue list, all of their followers. And then third, there's a yellow list, which is most Americans who are apolitical, really aren't paying attention, and even in some sense could care less. So this is what is going on. The date supposed to start 15 July to 15 September. I've observed that when you're talking about an operation that extends over 2 months, that's not a drill, that's an occupation. Now, the positive sign is that the governor of Texas has assigned the Texas Guard to monitor the Jade Helm troops there. And I have expressed, and I've given quite a few interviews on this at this point in time, that everyone in any country, in any state where Jade Helm is going on, should raise a ruckus about it, ask their official, find out what's going on, and encourage their governor to track it, find out what's going on. I regard Jade Helm as the single greatest menace to freedom and democracy in the United States in the history of this nation. That is my bottom line. And I'll just tell you, I have done a lot of research on this. Going through all this hassle with Gordon Duff was a colossal pain, but it reinforced my dedication to get to the bottom of it. And I gave you some links, which Ken and Ned very kindly included here at the bottom of the agenda today. I encourage you to check it out. Figure it out for yourself. Oath Keepers have addressed it. Dave Hodges' Common Sense Show has done a series of really excellent articles about it. There's just a host of stuff out there. It's very funny. Gordon was claiming that I was an Alex Jones stooge because, unbeknownst to me, Alex Jones has had one or another of his people, Paul Watson, for example, talking about Jade Helm. But what I've seen, I had no idea Alex had any interest in Jade Helm. What I've seen of Paul Watson, however, about Jade Helm was simply excellent. And it's just trying to play on popular conceptions or misconceptions. The source of information is much less important than how it hangs together with all the other information at your disposal. I will tell you, we have hundreds of data points now out there, each one of which could be viewed as individually uncertain. But when you look at the pattern, the constellation of these hundreds of data points, they create an unmistakable impression of what's going on, and it is profoundly disturbing.
Wow. Thank you so much, James. You certainly filled the bill for us tonight, and I know a lot of people want to ask questions and make comments. Before I do, I want to ask if Bill Wilt is on the call.
Yeah, I just came in late.
Okay. And who else might have come in since we took the roll? Any other late arrivals? Okay. All right. Well, we're really strapped for time, but we really need to open this up for questions because this is our featured presentation tonight. So let's see how quickly. I'm going to ask everybody to limit your question or comment to 15 to 20 seconds, okay? Make it quick. And, James, if you be as you can, concise in your responses,
yes.
Okay? Okay. Who would like to be on the stack to ask a question or make a comment?
Ned Delaney.
Ned? Who else?
Yeah.
Anybody else besides Ned? All right, I'll put myself on the stack. Go ahead, Ned.
Yeah. Pursuant to all this with Jade Helm, I stumbled on it. I didn't stumble onto it. It reminded me of a book that came out in 1964. There was a screenplay done by Rod Sterling called 7 Days in May.
Jim, are you familiar with this movie?
Yeah, sure. That was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah.
Where basically, I mean, the plot is that there's the military, there's an aspect or a branch of the military that's gone rogue, in a sense.
Yeah.
And I tried to find it on the net. It's you can see a trailer, but you have to purchase the movie. I haven't been able to find it free or anything, but it's just interesting that this surfaced about the same time as this issue with Jade Helm as to what their motives are and what they intend to do with this. And in reality, it's kind of interesting because the branches of service that are working through Jade Helm are basically covert branches. They're basically assassins.
And contrary to what Gordon had to say, this is being run by a three-star, a lieutenant general. And you don't have officers of this rank in any ordinary training drill. I mean, the whole claim he was making was camouflage. The reason he was suppressing O'Dowd and hoped I would get the message. But, of course, I didn't. I mean, nobody is going to gag me when there's something important to be said. And it convinced me that Gordon was running an op, and that, you know, that he had brought me in because he wanted to elevate the credibility of veterans today. And until this happened, he really hadn't shown his hand. It's very funny. He made a remark shortly after to try to explain away why he had given me the boot. He said two things. He said, I was a poor writer. And he said, in addition, I was a slow learner. And my response was, well, if it took him 150 articles to figure out I was a poor writer, then who's the slow learner?
You've apparently made comments that led people to believe that you've said, or someone has said, that Gordon Duff's real name is not Gordon Duff, but Bob Foote. And can you comment on that? I mean, who is Gordon Duff, in your opinion? Is he a veteran?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because Chip and Stu and others have been doing research into Gordon Duff, and it's very, very odd. I mean, he presents himself as a combat veteran from Vietnam, and, you know, he talks about a major defense-related company and portrays himself as quite a significant player, even on the world scene. And it's not at all clear how much of that is true. His actual name does appear to be Bob Foote, F-O-O-T-E. Stu verified that's actually the phone number at his home, where, interestingly, I've stayed overnight in his home on my way back from a trip to Nova Scotia conference up near Toronto. I on the way back, I stayed overnight at his home. I was thought favorably of Gordon. He has a wonderful, smooth manner. He's a great talker. He would call me up and schmooze me for hours. I think another reason he said I was a slow learner is I wasn't picking up on things he would want me to do. I mean, I'm steering my own ship. I mean, for God's sake, I've done enough research. This book that's just appeared, entitled, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, is actually my 30th book, and it may be the one of which I am most proud, because it deals with, I mean, I didn't author this, I edited this, and it has four different parts devoted to five different subjects. It takes on the moon landing, four different contributors. It takes on whether or not Paul McCartney died and was replaced. Again, four contributors. That may sound trivial in retrospect, but if you can replace the most widely observed man in the world, and the world by and large not noticed, you can replace anyone. So the book then turns to address what happened with Saddam Hussein, where it was a double who was put on trial and hanged, not Saddam, and Osama bin Laden, who actually died in Afghanistan in 2001, not in Pakistan in 2011. So those are illustrative cases. And then the final part of the book is devoted to the most controversy of all, the Holocaust, where objective scientific research establishes that what we've been told about the Holocaust is not correct. And it has to do with the use of Zyklon B in gas chambers. Zyklon B is a form of cyanide. If a person was put to death by cyanide, their body would turn pink. But we have no reports of pink bodies. And the chambers in which the Zyklon B is used interact with the walls to turn blue, but the only chambers that turned blue were those used for delousing. They were using Zyklon B to kill body lice because they were trying to contain the spread of typhus and other diseases in the camps. These were labor camps. You can't get work out of a corpse. Well, there's much more to it, but I'm telling you, this is a book that really approaches different forms of deceit and deception, especially lies we've been told by our government, in kind of a comprehensive way. And I was able to bring together a simply spectacular list of contributors. So I just mentioned that in passing because, you know, I do believe we have so many issues to expose, and our government has simply made a practice of lying, where Bush and Cheney and Karl Rove are especially adept at it. We're living with the consequences of their misrepresentations and falsehoods to this very day.
Okay, so you really don't know that that the Gordon Duff is a veteran, then, right? Is a fact.
Say that again.
You don't know that Gordon Duff is a veteran, as a fact, right?
Oh no, he appears to be a veteran, but he had an odd. He was apparently initially a rifleman, and then he was moved up to administrative headquarters as a clerk. So that appears we have his, you know, his military service record, and I haven't been poring over it, but us have, and you know, there are going to be various reports on what we've learned about Gordon and VT and so forth in the future.
Okay, thank you, Jim. All right, unless anybody has an urgent question or comment to make, in addition, we do need to move on because we're short on time. Does anybody?
Yeah, let me make. I'm in a bad connection. Well, I just wanted to recommend reading
You have a really bad connection because we can't hear you at all. Okay. Sorry.
Can't hear me? All right. Well, I'll send it to you by email.
Okay. Now, I should let people know, though, that despite the cogent nature of what Jim has related, Kevin Barrett could not join the call tonight. He was going to give an alternative point of view, but he said something about trying to come on next month, so he'll be here to give a different take on things. But
this is, of course, quite ironic because Kevin and I go way back. We've done many events, 9/11 events, for example, when I organized a symposium in London in 2010, debunking the war on terror. I flew Kevin over to be one of the speakers. When I organized the Vancouver hearings in 2012, I invited Kevin again to be a speaker, and I flew him up there as well. We did a radio show on Genesis for a year and a half called The Dynamic Duo, where he did Monday, Friday, I did Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And we currently do the False Flag Weekly News on No Lies Radio, which I highly recommend, where we go through the most important developments of the past week and critique them. And what is fascinating is that we have had these differences about Jade Helm that have been openly discussed during the show. So some of you might want to see, where we agree and disagree, because normally Kevin and I are very much on the same track. You might find those False Flag Weekly News of special interest.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Jim, for a really cogent presentation and for keeping us informed about the Jade Helm issue. And I hope people will take Jim up on his request to check out the links that we've provided in the draft agenda, which will give you a lot more information on some of the offerings that he's made on the subject. Okay, moving on to the next question, anthrax. Kat McGuire has requested that we give her input for her upcoming chairmanship of the anthrax panel at the New York, the New York...
The Left Forum.
Left Forum, right. They're going to have four panels on 9/11, and one of them is going to be on anthrax. And she'd like any input or a suggestion that we can make to help guide her in her presentation. Go ahead. Anybody want to... Do you want to make an intro here?
One of the leading experts on anthrax is Barry Kissin, K-I-S-S-I-N, from Frederick, Maryland, where Fort Defense...
He's on the panel.
Okay,
Barry's on the panel.
You got it.
Thank you. Any other suggestions for Kat on this?
This is not a suggestion.
What about Graham McQueen, who's done a marvelous book on it.
Graham's on the panel.
Good. Great. You're ahead of the game.
Yeah, big time. Okay. sounds like you're ahead of the game. Anybody else?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, I don't know if anyone heard today that the government just admitted that they accidentally sent anthrax to places in the U.S. and to South Korea by mistake. Has anyone heard that? It's
think how preposterous that is on its face.
I know. Russia Today has an article, if you go there, if you can see it on RT.com. But it was in the mainstream news also.
That's good to know. Thanks.
Yeah.
Probably what they're saying is that they were going to send it to a different set of addresses, and they sent it to the ones they sent it to by mistake.
No, the whole thing sounds just totally impossible. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. But
no.
Any other suggestions for Kat? Here in London, I guess Kat would just wish you well on your. On your important venture here, and hope that you give us some feedback about how the conference went after the fact, okay?
Okay, Wayne's on this call as well, and he's on a panel as well.
Wow. Is this going to be telecast by any chance, or stream?
So this is Wayne, and no, it's not going to be live streamed. We're hoping to have a number of these recorded. I'll just... tell you that we have four panels that the 9/11 Truth Outreach umbrella is putting on. One is called The Dangerous Scapegoating of Islam, Exacerbated by the Left's Silence about Controlled Demolition on 9/11, is one that myself, Dave Schlesinger, and Maury Salikhan are on. The 2001 Anthrax Attacks and Challenges to the Left is Kat McGuire, Barry Kissin, Meryl Nass, and Graham McQueen. Two of those will be joining by Skype. The American Deep State, How Capitalism Has Subverted Democracy, Cheryl Curtis, who's on the call, Andrew Craig, Russ Baker from Who, What, Why, and David McGregor will be on that one. And then Les Jamieson, the fourth one is Evaluating the Consequences of the Post-9/11 Era, Redirecting Our Future. And that's Les Jamieson, Frank Morales, and Mark Crispin Miller. So. It's going to be a busy weekend, and this is the first time that there's been such activity in the at the Left Forum, and I'm really excited about being part of that, and thank the other people on this call for stepping up and helping out. That's all over. Thanks.
Okay, so we'll hope to get information on the next call then. If somebody volunteered to bring it to us about how we can access that video once it's taped.
Just a little technical thing, Barry, here in Toronto. I was trying to reach Les Jamieson recently, and his email, which I believe was Jazzy Day, doesn't work anymore. It bounces. I wonder if anybody has Les's up-to-date email address.
Barry, actually, I'm on. I'm sorry about that. I'll give you one that definitely will work.
Good.
Yeah, artisan3, artisan3 at gmail.com.
Would you kindly repeat that?
Sure. artisan, as in Nancy, and the number 3 at gmail.com.
Good. Thanks.
You bet. Look forward to hearing from you.
That was Les Jamieson on the call, for the record.
Les, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, okay, Les is joining the call. Thank you. Les Jamieson on the call. Okay. Gotcha. Anybody else joining the call since we took roll that we don't have yet? Okay. All right, moving on. Bill Welt has developed some research on the use of directed energy weapons in 9/11, and he'd like to present the thesis for our consideration and discussion. Go ahead, Bill.
Hello.
Bill, are you on the call? Bill, Will? Going once. Going twice.
Was Bill the one? Was Bill the one having the technical difficulties earlier?
Could be. Somebody was sure having some serious technical difficulties, but I didn't really catch who that was.
I thought it might be Bill.
Might have been Bill. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just postpone this. It's Bill getting back on the call. We'll take it up then. All right. So, Kat McGuire has also requested that we spend a little time talking about the Charlie Hebdo potentially false flag operation and sent along a link essay by her sister Colleen on the subject that was linked and for download on the draft agenda. Kat, you want to lead the discussion for us and just sort of give us your take, and then maybe we can go from there?
Okay, can you hear me all right?
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I hope you all saw the video where the guy is holding, he's handcuffed and they're supposedly shooting him. And what we're seeing now in France is that he had after 9/11. All of a sudden, France now is shut down. And they're doing all kinds of high-level security checks and TSA kind of stuff that was immediately implemented for people's safety. So I'm concerned about where that is going and what other countries might be using the 9/11 Charlie Hebdo approach to do global fascism. And I also would like to know people's thoughts about the fact that Israel showed up that day and was all over the place. This foreign country been involved in domestic affairs. And so the connection to Israel and how much this was maybe even an internationally orchestrated false flag. I just don't feel that it was necessarily France who was steering this. France, the state, might as well have been victim of what came down, not just the Muslim community, but France as well, to keep in mind. So that's pretty much a lot of what my sister is doing, but I really want to on the importance, what we can learn from Charlie Hebdo going forward.
Before we go farther, somebody has a lot of scratching noise in the background or static, and so if you think it might be you, star 6 will mute your phone, and that way that background noise won't be audible for the rest of us, so please consider that. Okay, but who would like to be on this text comment?
Barry Zwicker here. A small word that the new book by Kevin Barrett, the anthology, I Am Not or We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, has excellent chapters in it, very worthwhile looking at. I'm working on a review of it for Truth and Shadows, and I'm really impressed with the content of Kevin's new book.
And I was going to say the same thing. Kevin put together 21 contributions on We Are Not Charlie Hebdo all around the world. There's no doubt about this being an Israeli false flag attack. I previously published on the false flag attacks in 1992 and 1994 in Argentina to publish that country for its collaboration with Iran in the development of the peaceful use of nuclear energy. In France, it was too much enthusiasm for Palestinian statehood. It was a growing movement, and they used Charlie Hebdo to tamp it down, and they now pass rather draconian provisions against anti-Semitism and so forth. All consequence were, I think there's no doubt that Benjamin Netanyahu was the principal planner of the Charlie Hebdo event. Israel is a past master at conducting false flag attacks. So, your remarks were very much on the money.
Yep.
Okay. Anybody else care to comment?
Yeah, Bill Wilt. I keep falling out and falling in. I'm not at my house location. I just wanted to add the two books by Sibel Edmonds, one of which is an autobiography. The other is a novel called The Lone Gladio, wherein she describes what the Operation Gladio, which used to be Europe and Europe-centric, and now it's morphed to Gladio B. And she has a brilliant, you know, it's like a Romana Clay. It's a, you know, a novel with a key. And she has a fascinating piece on the Chechen violence and the Boston bombing episode. She's cloaked it and moved it and fictionalized it, but she's got all the pieces together about who the you know, the players are, the two brothers Tarnaevs and all that kind of stuff. So I recommend reading. Sure, you have to read them together because one is one elucidates the other. That's all I have.
All right. Anybody else want to say something?
Yeah, this is Cheryl. I just wanted to say that I read somewhere, and I can't remember where now, but that the Rothschilds bought Charlie Hebdo in December, right before this happened. So maybe something.
If you visit Kevin's website, Truth Jihad Radio, let's see, truthjihadblogspot.com, you'll find he's on a tour with Charlie Hebdo. And you'll find the various locations he's going to be speaking, some of which may be in your vicinity. And in addition, although Gordon wiped out all my articles about the Boston bombing, I have a new one in consultation with the aunt of the Sarnoff brothers entitled "They Didn't Do It." Murat Sarnoff blows apart the Boston show trial, which you can find on my own personal blog and on Veterans Truth Network.
Okay.
Super.
Anybody else have a comment on the Charlie Hebdo issue? All right. Thank you for bringing that to attention, Kat, and hopefully we'll be discussing that in the future as there are more developments. Bill, are you back on the call now?
Yeah, I've got another phone.
All right. Good. We're going to take your issue up then that we had to postpone because we couldn't reach you, and that would be your presentation of your thesis on DEW 9/11 for a brief discussion. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I've couched this in sometimes sarcastic framework, but basically, because Condoleezza Rice mentioned the smoking gun not as a mushroom cloud meme, it occurred to me to look at the dates in our past history for the smoking, you know, for the cloud, the mushroom cloud. Turns out, from 1939 to 1945, that's when the U.S. got really cracking on it. So, starting in 1939 with a letter from Alfred Einstein, or Albert Einstein, to FDR, saying, hey, there have been some breakthroughs in nuclear fission. Better check it out. Those 6 years from that time, we had the H-bomb and the A-bomb. So as you go forward to the span of time between this you know, nuclear demonstration of power with living subjects to 2001, you find that the difference in time is, or elapsed time is from 1945 to 2001, you have 56 years. So it's, on the one hand, 6 years to the A-bomb from scratch. On the other hand, 56 years to 2001. And it just started getting me wondering, well, this is sort of interesting. What could, if these people working for 6 years could do so much, what could, you know, huge numbers of people, which I need to quantify, and what amounts of money, the same thing, quantify them, what could they have produced in 56 years? And a lot of it, of course, you'd imagine would be totally top, tippity-top secret.
Yeah.
And so that started getting me, started me looking places like Area 51 and spaceships. And I mean, it gets way out there into the UFO land, which I've never, tread upon before. But it's just the whole principle of the thing. You know, energy directed energy weapons, you know, one of these crowd area denial things with energy-directed microwaves to heat people up so that they're, like, boiling in their skin and they flee, or loud sounds, extra low frequency, just all of the, you know, the whole spectrum of energy and focusing it on something somewhere seems to be a profoundly logical place to look for stuff. And that's basically it.
Okay. Any comments or questions? I'll make one real quickly. My thought, you know, is this. Of the prevailing theories about what caused the World Trade Center catastrophes, there are only two that really seem to be able to account for the phenomena involved. One is Judy Wood's claim that you're sort of supporting here, that there was some exotic weaponry used that would have accounted for all that evidence. However, of course, we don't have any evidence for the existence of those weapons. And the other is the nuclear hypothesis, which is that a deep underground nuclear weapon caused a seismic shockwave that actually caused the disintegration of the buildings. I'm personally leaning a little bit more toward the second one right now because I'm studying Jeff Brager's work very closely, but I certainly think it has to be discounted before we totally endorse the only other alternative being the exotic weaponry. But that's just my thought on the subject. Anybody else?
Well, they don't have to be deep underground. I've published quite a lot about this, but they could be a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes that were directed upward and arranged in a sequence to simulate the, you know, a progressive collapse. Though, of course, you're seeing these two buildings blow apart in every direction from the top down and completely different than Building 7. So we know Building 7, of course, was a classic controlled demolition. What we have with 1 and 2 is completely different, but I certainly endorse the general character of the remarks you just made about the viable options that we have available to us.
Yeah, I think that's true, if I can come back, but it's sort of the things that that get me going through Judy's book are some of these weird outliers, you know, the automobiles, the backside of Building 7. I think she uses the term frothing, you know, that kind of stuff. These are really strange.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. She's done a good job on pointing out some of those anomalies that don't really fit with the nuclear hypothesis real well.
Well, that's only if you haven't looked at it thoroughly enough. But see, Gordon took out all the articles I had published about exactly this when he took out the whole 150 and took out all our work. I mean, probably a dozen articles about the use of nukes at the World Trade Center. So. Well, see, I'm going to do what I can to restore it. Meanwhile, there is one place for the Midwest 9/11 Truth Conference Part 2 where I give a sketch about a critique of A&E's approach and why I think the nuke is more adequate, but there it is.
Okay. Yeah, and you can get, if you want nuke info, you can go to my blog to donaldfox.wordpress.com.
Yeah, I forgot Don was here. Don's excellent work on it, and Jeff Prager's an excellent source, so I commend what you're talking about. It was presentations about this by Don and on behalf of Jeff at the Vancouver hearings that convinced me that this was almost certainly the right way to go, especially given the USGS dust sample evidence, which is really fascinating because the range and variety of elements found there is really only consistent with a nuclear demolition hypothesis.
What was your website again, Don?
Yeah, that's Donald Fox.
No, you got cut off again. Somebody just popped off the call.
Okay. Yeah, donaldfox.wordpress.com.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else want to make a comment on this?
Yeah, this is Wayne. Can I say something?
Keep it concise. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll be concise. You know, in response to the comments about super things like directed energy weapons, as someone who has been involved in the energy industry, energy storage is a really big deal, and the amount of energy that was on display released in 11 seconds would have been something on the order of 150 50,000 megawatts instantly, and there's no way you can store that much energy and discharge it that quickly. And as someone who's been dealing with energy issues of utility scale, megawatt hours, thousands of megawatt hours, thousands of gigawatt hours, there's no way to store that much energy. And if there was even a hint, we'd be able to do, we'd be having researchers working on it.
Even if it were done from space?
Okay, so let's go take, I don't want to get into this, but the U.S. military spent their space wars, Star Wars stuff. They were trying to promote. They were trying to get 20 kilowatts of energy to a target at distance, and that would have been a success because they could have melted the skin of an ICBM. 20 kilowatts. We're talking 100 million kilowatt hours. So that's a kilowatt. That's how much energy needed to be released. In those 11 seconds for each of the towers. You can't even fathom that much energy. As far as the nuclear hypothesis goes, you can't be down below because you've got core columns standing up. And take a look at the North Tower. They're standing up. They're not demolished. They're still there. And when you look at the demolition, they're sequential, floor by floor by floor, coming down. Something's doing the demolition. We don't know exactly what. And there's no sounds, no big bangs,
there was earth-shattering, earth-shaking explosions before the North Tower came down and the South Tower.
Just for the benefit of this group, you might like to know that Wayne and Tim Michael and Don Fox and I are conducting an ongoing series of discussions about this on my radio show, The Real Deal. Which is now video. It's been video since this year, so I have about 50 video versions. And we have had a first installment of 2 hours, and we're going to have another installment of 2 hours coming up, and we'll continue it as long as it takes. But there are a lot of issues we're hashing out in the process. I'll send a link to Ned to add about it.
I want to thank Jim for having providing an opportunity to have this conversation. It's a great forum for that. So thanks, Jim, and hope you all tune in. Over.
Yeah. Excellent.
All right. I think we're going to have to leave it there because we're running short on time. Thanks for promoting the discussion, Bill. Let's move on now to, James Hufford has a book review for us on Mujahid Kamran's 9/11 and the New World Order, which has just hit the press, and Jim got an early copy. So, Jim, we're all ears.
Okay, well, not exactly. It was the publication date was September 11, 2013, but I just found out about it, and I thought it looked extremely interesting, so I blew my budget and ordered it, and it came, and I'll tell you about it. The author's Mujahid Kamran, and title is 9/11 and the New World Order. It's 384 pages, hard copy, 2013, Mujahid Kamran was born in 1951, so he's in his mid-60s. He's educated in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and University of Edinburgh. He's professor of physics and vice-chancellor at Punjab University in Pakistan. And he has written several previous books on physical science and biography, etc., including The Grand Deception, Corporate America, and Perpetual War, 2011, which I'd like to get sometime too. This book I'm reviewing is the only thing I've read by him, but this book I am reviewing is an exploration of both 9/11 and the New World Order, led by World Central Banking. And his book offers the best, clearest, and most readable survey of the identity and nature of the New World Order I've seen to date to which he attributes the forces culminating in, and he definitely avoids and the forces culminating in and deftly avoiding responsibility for 9/11. One thing I'm delighted about with this book is that it's clear but careful, balanced approach, although emanating from a Muslim country, the book doesn't well refers to the apparent Israeli involvement while exhibiting no signs of anti-Semitism. And as for 9/11, he surveys the known facts with unusual thoroughness, adding trenchant interpretive observation of his own throughout that really made a lot of sense to me. And this tendency characterized his stellar technical treatment as a scientist of nanothermite and the physical aspects of the evidence on which he demonstrates throughout his authoritative qualification and fitness to address. But yet the presentation is exceedingly clear, easy to follow, and I found it compulsive reading. I thought I'd seen and read most of the credible material in book form regarding 9/11 and its anomalies. Like a number of you, I'm sure my shelves contain scores of such volumes, but Dr. Kamran cites and quotes extensively from both sources I was familiar with and also from lots and lots of books and authors of obviously wonderful books I'd never heard of before, certainly a rare feat for a scientifically attuned author in a part of the world as far afield from the center of action as Pakistan. I received my copy directly from Pakistan in a package that would be a stamp collector's dream, and it's not cheap to buy, but you'll find it well worth the purchase price, and also like me, you can search the web and certainly find a better price than the offer on Amazon. So anyway, that's the basics of what my interpretation of this book.
Lovely summary.
Thank
you. Yeah. Now, where will your review be?
Oh boy, I might mention it on my own blog on 9/11 Grassroots. I haven't decided yet. I usually digest these things a little while before I say anything there, but you'll probably see something come out.
Okay. What was the cost of it?
Well, it on Amazon, I believe it's $38 plus postage. I ended up paying $31 including postage, so you can save some money if you scout around a little bit online.
Would you send us the link to your purchasing arrangement, Jim, so that others that might be interested might
Well, I guess so. I think I bought it on, what is it called, ABE, American Book Exchange website.
Oh, okay.
But just look on bookfinder4u.com and you'll get the best price out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Does anybody care to make a comment or ask a question about this book? All right, Jim. Thank you for a really useful and inspired review. You bet. Hopefully a lot of others will be interested like I am and picking that up if it's within their budget.
Yeah, well, that's right.
That I have to think about it. But definitely a worthwhile endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, last item on the agenda. I have come into contact with a book called JFK to 9/11, 50 Years of Deep State, by one Laurent Guglielmo, if I'm pronouncing his name right. I could not believe this book. When I have not yet read the book. I have been able to read the first 8% of it, which is free if you have Kindle and want to look at a sample. I do intend to get the book, for sure. I'd like to get the hard copy so I can mark it all up like I do with everything. But I want to read just a couple of paragraphs to give you an idea of how this fellow writes about deep state and deep history as a way of encouraging us to consider whether or not all of us reading this book might give us a common grounding in the notion of the deep state and what we mean by it, since that is the Greek current ages. He says, deep history is the story of the deep state, meaning the power structures that act behind the scene of political spectacle to set in motion great movements of history. Although it has always existed, the deep state has been strengthened in modern democracies, in a dictatorship it cannot be distinguished from the public state, by those who consider their interests above the people and have taken control of the political system without regard to elections or legal principles. Thus, the deep state is hostile to the democratic institutions of the Republican state. The transparency that is essential to the latter is lethal to the former. But the deep state seeks less to destroy democratic power than to confine and control it. In the United States, it has for 50 years gained almost total control of foreign policy, so much so that almost all direct or indirect actions of the United States in the world have been carried out without the general public's knowledge or understanding. The exceptional power of the American deep state can be explained by the dual and contradictory nature of that nation, best defined by the oxymoron imperial democracy. Within its borders, the United States is an ostensible democracy, but outside it behaves like an empire or colonial power. The deep state is the invisible heart of the empire, the command and control center of imperial violence. This violence must remain hidden from the eyes and consciences of the American citizenry, who must be satisfied that the government acts only to defend the interests of global freedom and democracy. That is why the deep state constantly needs to blow around itself a screen of humanitarian smoke. There's a lot more on here that I'd like to quote from, but we don't really have the time unless people want to take it. I guess we still have a little time on the call.
Looking on Amazon at the reviews, they're generally very, very positive. And from what you've said and from what I read here, this looks to me as though it's a very worthwhile book, and clearly it's developing the themes of Peter Dale Scott, which he first introduced in JFK and the politics of the deep state.
He cites Peter Dale Scott by name, of course, and a few other people who have been instrumental in developing this notion. One of the interesting things about this book is that through Kindle you can get it in an electronic version for $5, okay, which makes it very very accessible. So I'm wondering if people will consider taking this on as a group project, and we could either use part of the call to discuss it as we go, or create a separate call for this purpose and just use it as a way of developing our common sensibility about the deep state and what we mean by it and how it relates to the larger issues that we're trying to deal with. Does anybody have a comment on that?
I think it's a good idea.
Yep. I agree.
We can't seek too much to grasp the biggest picture that we can grasp. It's a constant challenge and a need for us to educate ourselves.
It's in paperback for only $13.82.
Right. $13.82 for the hard copy, and that's what I'm planning on getting. But for $5, you can get the Kindle version. And Kindle's downloadable to a PC for free or to a smartphone or whatever.
Yeah, this is Ned. I think this is a good example of why we expanded the focus of the teleconference and addressing that particular shift.
Yeah. Well, actually, the bulk of our agenda tonight is outside of the immediate realm of 9/11. So that shows that we've already grown. Okay. I think it will be helpful to get a more concrete understanding of what we mean by deep state and how 9/11 and, in this case, JFK, we consider these to be the two watershed events in the deep state's development, of course.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where I think we're all coming from. So I will go ahead and take it as a consensus that we're agreeing to read this book as a group, and people should just get a hold of it and start reading it, and then maybe next time we can talk about what we want to do with setting up a discussion about it or pursuing it as a more formal study, okay?
Yeah.
For the time being, we're agreeing as a group that we all want, we want all our members to read this book. We have a common grounding in this understanding, okay?
Great idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good deal.
All right. Well, we've got a little bit of time left, so does anybody have any announcements? Those of you involved in that left forum, how do people that are in the area there, how do they sign up for that?
This is Wayne. So you can go on to the leftforum.org, and you can, I think you can still get a ticket online, although online reservations may have ended. The it's going to be this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So that's all. Thanks.
Okay. And what's the location?
Oh, it's John Jay College of Criminal Justice, the heart of the beast, actually, in New York City in about 57th Street in Manhattan.
Thank you. Well, I sure wish I was local to that. Okay. Any other announcements? Well, I certainly want to thank everybody for their concision tonight. We had an extremely packed agenda, and incredibly, we were on time and under budget in terms of time. So, actually, congratulations to everybody on a very, very, very informative and provocative hour and a half. And, of course, the audio will be available for everybody's review in the near future. Anybody that's not on our on our email listserv and would like to be, just send me a private email and we'll get you on that too. Okay? Thank you all for joining us tonight. Special thanks to Jim Fetzer. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Ken.
Good night.
My pleasure.
Good night. Bye.